to see you. You're just the right guy. Okay. I need to know who your favorite musician is. Favorite singer, band, singer. How do you spell her last
name? Hari Belafonte.
Okay, is she an Indian?
No.
Okay.
She's a Jamaican.
Oh.
Hari Belafonte.
Oh, Patty?
Hari. H-A-R-R-Y.
Okay, put it real clearly.
H-A-R-R-Y.
Oh, Hari Belafonte.
Yeah.
Oh, Hari Belafonte, yeah. Great. Okay, thank you. Yeah, I thought you said Heidi Belafonte.
Yeah.
I've never heard of it. Hari Belafonte. Okay? Great. Okay, welcome to Anchorage East Rotary for our Wednesday meeting, September 9th, 2009. Okay, that would have only been 100 years off. No. Okay, we're going to start with a Pledge of Allegiance by Karen Smith with an inspiration by Casey Neal. Karen?
Go, Karen, if you guys please join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Inspiration.
Casey, where are they? There you go. You are okay.
This morning, as I was walking from the parking lot to the Rotary meeting, last night when I was, well, first of all, I was thinking about how thankful I am that I belong to Rotary, and then how thankful I am for all the friends that I've met over the years in Rotary. And then I was thankful that I belong to this club of Rotary. So by the time I got here, I was very thankful. Me and the Lord had a good conversation. But I want to say that each month when our Rotary magazine comes, if you take a moment to go through it, you can't help but be inspired by the people that have written articles and things that are happening in Rotary around the world. And so as I was looking last night, I went through the book, and I was so inspired. It was like, oh, this is good. So I encourage you to do that. I did have one last thought I wanted to share with you. I was reading this little book called 212 Degrees, and the saying is, at 211 degrees, water is hot. At 212 degrees, it boils. And with boiling water comes steam, and steam can power a locomotive. So if we put just one more degree in what we do, in personal life, in volunteer life, in all our things that we do, we'll be even more successful than we already are.
Thank you, Casey. That's an interesting metaphor. Good metaphor. Thank you. Okay, I'd like to thank the team captains this month, and they will be for the whole month of October, Gwen Lee and Michael Broder. Gwen and Michael, thank you very much, team captains for October. And the greeters, coincidentally, are Gwen Lee and Michael Broder. So thank you guys for greeting and doing it yourself and taking the lead. And we have to introduce visiting Rotarians and guests, our own lovely Sandra Wicks.
Good afternoon, fellow Rotarians. Boy, I volunteered for the right week to do this. We have one visiting Rotarian, Rob Lang from Anchorage International, and Education Engineering is his field. Rob, stand a little bit so people can see it. Hi, Rob.
Only one. Wow. Okay, summer's over. The fall has begun. Okay, I'd like to introduce the head table. And the question for the head table today, and I told our speaker, Terry Lockhart, that 2 weeks ago was where you got your first kiss. So she was off the hook today. It's not where you got, when or where you got your first kiss. But the question today is, who is your favorite singer or group? And to from your left to right, the first member of the head table is Jim Liska. Jim's been a Rotarian for about six or seven years. And Jim's favorite group is the Beatles. And the next person, okay, oops, that wasn't first. I'm sorry, I missed Sally Archer. The order's different here. Okay, Sally Archer, sorry. Sally is actually the first one here left. You may have thought that was Jim in the maroon coat there, but it's not Jim, it's Sally. So Sally Archer, and Sally's favorite singer is B.B. King. And to Jim's left, to my immediate right, is a new member, Utpal Duda. And Utpal's, and he's a brand new member, this is his first or second official meeting as a Rotarian, and his favorite singer is Harry Belafonte. Good choice, I can tell by the murmuring. And our speaker, Kerry Lockhart's favorite singer is a country rock singer, Pat Green. And she's going to be introduced by Mark Slaughter. And Mark, you weren't sitting there when... Who's your favorite singer? David Bowie. David Bowie, okay. And mine is Elvis. So, that's your head table. Welcome to the head table, please. Mark, good, quick decision. I like that. Okay, yellow cups. Just remember, this is the time now to put a couple dollars in the yellow cup and help out our wonderful exchange student who is here today. So, and Suzanne so far has been here a number of the meetings. Where is she sitting? Where's Susanna? Right there? Susanna, just stand up and let's say welcome again. Let's give a round of applause to Susanna, our inbound student. So welcome, Susanna. Happy to see you here. Have you worked on your putting? Have you worked on putting?
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. You came close last time. Wasn't too bad. Okay. Thanks for coming, Susanna. Appreciate it. And we're ready now for Happy Dollars and Fines. And our substitute sergeant-at-arms, Greg Solomon. Greg.
Hey, everybody. Well, Dave sends his regards. He's out sick. And vicariously through... Mr. Olson asked me to jump in and help out. So we're going to start off with myself putting a happy dollar in because my daughter's now all married off. Thank God. That's all I can afford. All right, we'll start over here in the corner. You guys have any happy dollars or proud dollars or announcements? No? No? Okay. All right, the hands fly up. Here we go. Sandra.
Yes, I have an announcement. We are in desperate need of help on this log moving project down at Seward at the Callisto Cabin. Our efforts have, however, motivated State Parks, so they're putting one or two of their people with chainsaws on duty that day to help cut the logs, but we still need people to move the logs. So please, please get in touch with me and or Bruce, if you see him around, and let us know that you can come help with this. It's really important to get this done before the spring melt water, and because of the losing light for the winter, there aren't going to be a lot of other good opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra. Great work there. I'm sure it'll be a moving experience. All righty. Anne-Marie. Well, what is it? Is it a happy dollar? Is it
two happy dollars? I have double the thanks. Two happy dollars. I'm Anne-Marie Moreland. Good afternoon, President Rick, fellow Rotarians. Two reasons to be happy. First, on Labor Day, a hike up to Flat Top was amazing. The most incredible experience. And my daughter got higher than I did, so I was really proud of her. The second thing is you can do amazing things this Saturday, too. And I want to thank Janine for being on the spot with those great slips. There's a slip on your table that you can fill out because you want to be part of Saturday's mobile food pantry. We meet in Fairview, and it's your opportunity to have a great time and be with fellow Rotarians. And I have a bag full of gloves that we will not need yet for about a month. So please come to the mobile food pantry this coming Saturday at 1:30.
Sounds like a good deal. Anybody else? Oh, there's somebody here. Diane.
fellow Rotarians, President Rick. I've an exceedingly happy $5. 5 years ago this weekend, Jerry and I were married. We spent a few years interviewing each other before that. And this weekend we celebrated on a deserted island in Prince William Sound in the moon shadow.
Congratulations. Wow, where's Jerry? There he is. So, Jerry, is this true?
It's absolutely true and wonderful to be with this lady and a wonderful helicopter pilot that I just love and adore.
So, would you recommend a trial run this long to anybody else? You don't have to answer that. You guys are very well suited. Thank you. And congratulations. How about at this table here? Do we have any happy bucks, announcements, funny smiles? Nothing. There's one. And we're just going to work the room zigzagging style. How about these guys over here? Oh, Marjorie. Oh, a happy check.
President Rick, Sergeant Arms Greg, fellow Rotarians, and Marjorie Kogas, and I actually have $100 for my Paul Harris Foundation. I'm just happy. My granddaughter started college this year and is loving it, which is amazing, at 18. My grandsons are healthy and just had their second and third birthdays. My husband just had oral surgery that went textbook perfect, and he's recovering properly. So it's just a wonderful year, and it was time to make another contribution.
Thank you, Marjorie. By the way, you have slimmed down, too. That's another reason to be happy. You look very good. So. Anybody else at this table? Rick, are you wearing your uniform today? No? No? Was it a day off? All right. Okay. Is Rich working today? Did you make him do the work? Okay. All right. We've got Rochelle here.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon, President Rick, fellow Rotarians. I'm your social care. I just want to remind everybody to be here next week for Show Wednesday. I'm going to be handing out all of your Lion King tickets for those of you that signed up. And I really need to ask a favor, and that's that you, for those of you that did sign up for dinner, I really do need you to let me know. I do have a list if you're coming or not. As you know, it is reservations, so when I block out 40 spots for the crow's nest, I need to make sure everybody's coming. And it's okay if there's something that came up, so don't feel bad if you have to give me a call and say, you know, we can't make it. But you're going to have a great dinner that night and some great wine, so I hope I'll see you. That's my first five happy dollars. The second thing is I'm getting ready for another event after that one, and my first real social meeting is the 25th, and several of you got invitations, so please let me know too as well. I'm very honored to be supported at the place where I work, and so we are having a catered lunch, and I really do need to know if you're going to attend that as well. So I think I gave out like 20 invitations because everybody wants to be on the social committee this year, so thank you all very much.
Anybody back at our hardworking executive table back here? Anybody have any happy dollars or announcements? I see some smiles. All right, I'll let you do your job. All righty, here we go. I see all guys at this table. Rick, I think we have a problem. I think we're going to need to do a little fine action here. Who's going to cough it up, or are you just going to all throw a dollar on the table?
Well, you know, wait a minute, Sergeant Adonis Craig. I'm thinking that because there's no woman at the table? Is that what it is?
Well, unless somebody's got some secrets I don't know about.
Well, I'm not sure what the fine is, but if it's a fine for no women at the table, I think we need to fine every woman in here a dollar for not sitting at the table.
Oh.
As long as you're not fighting the guys for no women, we won't find the women for no guys.
All right, I'll let you guys arm wrestle on that one. How about any happy bucks? No? Happy ducks? No? No Oregon fans? All righty. We're moving on. We have a birthday table here.
Rich Dyson.
Oh, where is he? Oh, yeah.
Yes, President Rick, fellow Rotarians, Rich Dyson here. I'm going to have a happy dollar because I really, really like our president.
I think we have a male thing going on here.
President Rick, my name is Jeff Brown. I am the Airy Leader.
We're going to do something that's never been done in the area before. We're going to have a trifecta. That means three programs in one evening to get a bunch out of the way so people like me who like to sleep in a little bit later can do that in October and November. So if you need to get some area meetings done, if you need to do some makeups on the 29th at my house, food and cheap wine will be provided. But we're going to have Vocational Month, New Beginnings Month, New Generations Month, which for you new people, that is the youth programs, and Foundation Month all at once. So maps will be provided if you have to do a makeup or maybe three makeups, or if you need to do some area meetings, it will be done at my house. If you just want to come by and have some food and some cheap wine, that'll be there too. So see me if you need to do some area meetings and makeups.
Two things I might say. ARI is another one of the millions of Rotary acronyms, and it's for to learn about Anchorage East. But Jeff, I think we've got a new name for you now, and you just gave me an inspiration. I mean, you said you were an ARI leader. I think officially you should be known as ARI head. So we'll call ourselves former president ARI head of Rotary. Okay.
That has a familiar ARI about it. All right, we have another announcement. Then President Rick, do you want to have us do the happy birthday here for these guys? Sing how we
are. Yeah, yes, I do. Yeah.
President Rick, fellow Rotarians, I'm Susanna Morgan. I have a guest today, Amy DeBrule from Bristol Bay Native Corporation, is checking out Rotary. Please welcome Amy. I turned 40 on Sunday, so I have four happy dollars for my 40th birthday. And in the second half of my life, here's what I wish. I wish that I will be as wise as Ventus Plum. I wish I will be as happy as Kevin Curtis. And I wish I will be as talented as Clark Mishler and as handsome as President Rick.
I think if there's any such thing as a lifetime no fine button, I will bestow it on you.
Well, okay, we can have our exchange lead us in a happy birthday. Yeah. Would you like to lead us in our happy birthday? Happy birthday. Just say yes. I'll help you. It's an American tradition. We're gonna.
Greg will help you.
There you go. Stand up.
Stand up. Greg will help you. And we're gonna sing happy birthday. And you're gonna learn it as you lead it.
Sing along with me. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Rotarians. Happy birthday to you. Thank you.
All right.
And with that, we have Woody. Thank you, Greg. President Rick, fellow Rotarians, I'm Woody Yanks with two very proud dollars. First, I'd like to introduce my guest, Yulia Soslova. Yulia is from Vladivostok, Russia. I've known her for 2 years. She's been a tremendous asset with our youth exchange program, both on this side and, of course, on the Russian side. Yulia is here at UAA for a second degree in accounting. She already has a degree in international economics. Now she wants to learn the economic principles and how to apply them to her career field. Please welcome my U.S. Soslova. And secondly, I'm very proud of our youth exchange program. I don't see RC or his committee, so I'm speaking on his absence. We have fall orientation this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It is designed for all of our newly arrived inbound students, people like Susanna, all of our newly returned students who were in their host country last year. They are now our rebound students for the third year in the program. All of our youth exchange officers, and our club is being represented, and we now have the parents of our students coming to the orientation, which is another milestone for us. Last week, before we went into the holidays, I understand we had over 100 people registered for fall orientation, which is a new threshold. So the program continues to grow. I just wanted to give you an update on what's happening and invite you, if you have a little bit of time, please feel free to stick your heads in, and by all means, grab the committee members, grab Susanna, and find out what's really going on with Youth Exchange. Thank you.
Woody, thank you very much for your continuing work with Youth Exchange and Ryle and the young people. Thank you very much.
How about in the table in the back? Gentlemen, another table without any ladies, Rick.
I don't know. This is getting to be kind of a pattern here.
Well, you know, I'm gonna pay a $5 fine for Walter because I've been on Walter here for the first 2 months of the year, and I just want to let you know, Walter, I'm gonna pay a $5 fine for you, and just let you know, I'm not gonna pick on you anymore.
Oh.
Well, thank you for the fine, President Rick, fellow Rotarians Walter Featherly, but your credibility, I'm afraid, is not quite that good that I'm going to believe that you are not going to pick on me for the rest of the year. But in any event,
maybe a little bit.
I do have a happy dollar, and that is for the beautiful, the incredible weekend that I just spent up in the mountains moose hunting in this beautiful place that we all live. The Talkeetna Mountains are just stunning this time of year with color, and then the weather, of course, helped. I do want to say, however, a bit of advice for anyone else who might want to go into the mountains for a 4-day trip by horseback, a 4-hour ride in, that you do a gear check before you go, because it's a little late to do the gear check when you arrive like we did and discover that the tent that we had brought along was the tent that a grizzly bear had shredded 4 years ago, and for some reason my hunting partner had not thrown the damn thing away, but instead just put it back in the sack and put it in the garage, in his garage, so that we just threw it in the panniers and off we went. But that aside, we didn't suffer hypothermia, but almost. We did have a great time, and even better, it was a successful hunt because we didn't have to work at bringing the meat back. But
oh, good, that's wonderful.
But there's one more chance. So thank you very much.
Thank you
for paying the fine.
You don't have to pay the dollar. I paid the five for you.
Oh, thank you.
It would have been more than a dollar anyway because you talked too long. That's okay. You don't have to pay it. I've already paid it.
No, that's all right.
Yeah. Okay.
He's paying for the conscience.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Good. You good?
Okay.
Got several.
Rick this table.
One.
President Rick, I'd like to enter a happy dollar to give my thanks to Anchorage School District for a quality, wonderful education K-12, in which we sat in the classroom and listened to wonderful, inspiring speeches by Presidents John F. Kennedy and Dwight David Eisenhower, and we were very spiritually, historically, and educationally enriched for that experience. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Warren.
Thank you, Warren.
Rick?
Hey, Rick. President Rick, fellow Rotarians, I'm Rick Goodfellow, and I'm happy that I have the opportunity to unveil a soon-to-come social event on behalf of the Social Committee. And the numbers to remember are 11-11, November 11th, which is Veterans Day. So, quick poll. How many people love opera? Wow. More than I expected, to be honest. All right. How many people are afraid of opera? This is for you. The Anchorage East Rotary Opera Tolerators return. We are going to take a group of people to Anchorage Opera on Veterans Day evening. There'll be some preliminaries, a little orientation, the opera, and for those of you who, well, if necessary, there will be post-opera counseling. More to come, Veterans Day.
11-11.
Okay. Ipaliachi and Sister Angelica.
Tony Morgan, you did.
Great, thank you very much.
All right. Oops. We got another. There you go.
Hey. President Rick, Sergeant-at-Arms Greg, and fellow Rotarians, I have five happy bucks today because I just returned from Ohio, where I helped celebrate my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. And I wasn't involved with the preparations for this, but I did notice my parents had rented a somewhat large reception hall for this event, and I thought, well, you know, I hope the there's a good crowd coming out for this. And as it happened, I was running a little bit late for it. And when I came into the parking lot, I had trouble getting a parking space. And there were over 150 people that came to have dinner and celebrate my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. And it was just a great thing to be there for, worth making that four time zone trip.
That's neat. Thank you, Mark.
All right. We got a string.
We're getting behind, Sandra.
Okay.
One more quick one.
With regard to the opera, I haven't checked recently, but if you remember when Armando was here and sang for us last spring, he's supposed to be doing the mariachi.
Okay, he'll do it. Okay, good. Thank you for that.
Okay, we're going to do a no find button today?
Yes, we are.
All right.
And Barbara Krager has it. Barbara.
President Rick and fellow Rotary friends, my name is Barbara Krager. But that's okay. We had a former president that used to say Krager. It's okay. Very quickly, I just wanted to let you know that my husband and I are the owners of the Horn Doctor Music Store, and we've recently expanded our store on 10th and Ingrep. So as you're coming up the Seward Highway and you come by 10th Avenue, look to your left, and you'll see our brand new expansion. With that expansion, we've decided to add a name also. People say, oh, you're not changing the Horn Doctor name, are you? And we're leaving the Horn Doctor, but people have tended to think that the Horn Doctor just sold horns or doctored horns. But there is, in fact, we have guitars, we have violins, we have pianos, we have drum sets, we have ukuleles, we have djembes, and many other instruments that I'll talk to you about this month. But there's a brochure on your table. If you have a young person in your life or who may be interested in music, this is a perfect opportunity to check out what it costs to rent an instrument or to purchase a student instrument. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Barbara. That's Barbara.
I thought you just had horny doctors over there.
Now, Barbara, you're still on Ingra Street? 10th and Ingra. Okay, just to remind. 10th and Ingra. Okay. Okay, could I have Anna Marie Moylan and Kat Jones please come up here? Come forward. There's Kat Jones and Anna Marie. Come on up, ladies. And as they're coming up, both of them, they have earned their blue badge. And they're ready to be full-fledged Rotarians. Now, both of them were at our party on August 1st, and Catherine, in deference to her friend Thelma, decided not to go out on the boat because Thelma was afraid of any boat that didn't have a restaurant on it. But at a restaurant on it, that was okay. Or a place to sleep. And my boats don't have restaurants or a place to sleep. Okay. But my memory of Anna Marie is flying through the air at about 40 miles an hour, going over lakes in an inner tube with Dave Kessler, I think. Okay. So, anyway, congratulations, both ladies, for doing everything you had to become full-fledged forever and ever Rotarians. Okay. We also have a person who's going to become a new member today, and he probably thinks that's the end of things once he becomes a new member, but it's really the beginning of things. He's got to go from a red badge to a blue badge and then just become an involved, active, exciting, fun-loving Rotarian, and I think he will. So would Tim Wilson come forward with his inductor, Rochelle Edlin? And Bob, you've got the material, okay? And Rochelle will introduce Tim.
Make it shorter. All right.
We all know Tim Woolston, and I'm really happy to, and I'm honored to bring him into our Rotary group, because our Rotary group is the best group, and I think he chose the right one. As a matter of fact, I know he did. So I'll read his bio to you. Tim Woolston was born and raised in upstate New York, where at a young age he was imbued with a curiosity about world events by reading a newspaper every day with his grandmother, who was the last person on his daily afternoon paper route. This curiosity led to a career in journalism, which brought him to Alaska in 1986 as news director of public radio station KSKA. At a time of $9 oil and significant budget cuts to public broadcasting, it was an interesting time to move to Alaska, but Tim says it was among the best decisions he ever made. From KSKA, he moved to KTUU Channel 2 as weekend anchor, where he found his true calling, getting to wear makeup every day. His 12 years at Channel 2 took him to every corner of Alaska. He spent weeks in Valdez covering the oil spill and cherished many moments following the teams in the Iditarod, and many moments except one. 20 years ago this year, Tim and his cameraman crashed in a Cessna 185 at Puntilla Lake, this side of Rainy Pass. On impact, Tim crashed through the pilot's door because he wasn't wearing his seatbelt. He cracked a couple vertebrae in his back, bloodied his face a bit, but like a true TV journalist who never misses a good dramatic story, he and his cameraman salvaged the camera from the wreckage and shot their own story, which, of course, led to be the number one story that night on the news. And after a day in the hospital, actually went back to finish the race. For the last 8 years, Tim has owned and managed Northwest Strategies, a full-service advertising and public relations agency with 20 employees and terrific, fabulous, wonderful, outstanding clients like the Hotel Captain Cook. His beautiful wife, Christina, is here today. Please welcome her. They have two children, Noah, who's 4, and Charlotte, who's 2, and Tim has two older daughters, Savannah, 15, and Shelby, 11. And in a year, they'll have 4 kids in soccer. Like many of you, their lives are very full, and many days it feels like they're running a diner and taxi service, but they wouldn't have it any other way. Please welcome Tim Woolston.
Finished yet, Tim.
That's right.
Yeah. Cheers, buddy.
Geez, I worked on this for 10 minutes. Now, come on.
Tim, today you are joining an elite group of individuals who total over 1.2 million members worldwide. You've been accepted into this group because of your outstanding character and your willingness to put service above self. The honor and privilege of Rotary membership carries with its duties and obligations. You'll be expected to attend the club's meetings regularly, to perform your share of club service, and to place your knowledge and talents at the disposal of the club in its task of carrying the principles of Rotary into the daily life of the community. I charge you to judge yourself by the Rotary four-way test of things you think, say, or do. First, is it the truth? Second, is it fair to all concerned? Third, will it build goodwill and better friendships? And fourth, will it be beneficial to all concerned? You have a lot to learn about Rotary. It's not just another club, it's a way of life. But you were elected to membership because we felt you would fit into this way of life. Always remember the Rotary motto, service above self. Fellow East Anchorage Rotarians, I present to you Tim Woolston, the newest Rotarian in the world, and I charge you not to fail in your duty by giving him your friendship and helping him to make his membership useful and happy.
G.
Jeff, thank you very much. That was very nice. And Tim, as you get ready to leave, if you would stand up by the door when we're done, and people can shake hands with you as you go out, so that would be great. Okay, we're going to introduce our speaker, but I just want to say one thing, and that is we had Amber from Bhutan speak last week, and I just want to tell you the reaction from our Rotary Club to help out Amber, who lived for 17 years in a refugee camp with his family, got married, raised his family in a refugee camp, and is now here in Anchorage. Just to let you know, Barbara Kager gave him a guitar. Kager gave him a guitar, so that was very nice. And I'll give this whole list first, and we can have a big round of applause for everybody. Cleo Burgett, she has a bunco club, and she's getting her bunco buddies to host them and do some special things and adopt their family. That hasn't been done yet, but she's working on it, and she thinks they'll do it. Rich Dyson brought appliances, food processors, toasters, appliances over to Amber and his family. Gloria Kroon is preparing a family dinner for her whole family. Gwen Lee gave Amber a tour of Ark of Anchorage and arranged for a job application, and he's in the process of trying to get a job there. And Pam Minkman gave him a car. So, anyway, thank you, Anchorage East Rotary, for doing those wonderful things for Amber. And now I'd like to ask Mark Slaughter to introduce our speaker.
Thank you, President Rick. Thank you. It gives me a great pleasure to introduce Carrie Lockhart, the Alaska Production Manager for Marathon Oil Company. This is Carrie's third visit to Alaska. She originally came up as an intern after graduating from Montana Tech with a BS in engineering. I have the privilege of working with Carrie's employees as I deal with the gas supply issues. You'll have an interesting perspective from Carrie with the producer side of things in Cook Inlet. Just a little quick background. Carrie is a mother of two. She has two boys, Hagen, who's three, Noah, who's six, and her husband, Brent. And in between managing all of Marathon's production in Cook Inlet, she somehow manages to find time to do a little skiing, a little running, and spend time with her family. And without further ado, here's Carrie.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you all today. This is a happy group, so this is neat. I have, pardon? We may not be happy when we get out of here, no. I have about a 30-minute presentation, so I'm going to try to scrunch it into the 20 minutes we have remaining. So I apologize if I'm going to be talking with my Norwegian fast pace.
25 minutes.
Okay, 25, so we can ease up a little bit. Marathon is a fully integrated oil company. We do have global operations. We are the fourth largest integrated oil and gas company. That means we have upstream operations as well as downstream refineries. This is just a display of where we operate. We have a big presence in West Africa, the UK, and then obviously our domestic operations. So today I want to address two things with you in the brief time that we have together. And the first is natural gas reliability in South Central Alaska specifically. And then the second is what Marathon's doing to ensure that we have reliable natural gas for our homes. While today the focus is on South Central Alaska, these topics are not unique to Alaska or even the U.S. It is clear that we are all part of a global energy market that is inextricably linked together regardless of geography. We live in a very dynamic world where commodities are influenced globally and markets face extreme volatility. For many years, Alaskans have enjoyed unusually low natural gas prices, and the market was thought to be isolated and disconnected from the effects of the broader energy world. But as supply and demand have tightened in this area, global influences are felt. And I think we've all felt that with our home heating. Alaskans, virtually like every other consumer of energy products, have experienced wild upward swings as well as dramatic reductions. It is in my view that some level of change is warranted in recognition of our connection to this global marketplace in order to ensure continued long-term natural gas reliability for all of us. I'd like to discuss my view on this. Cook Inlet has transitioned from a production region with significant overhang in gas supply and deliverability. And when I talk about natural gas supply, that is the annual supply that we have available. When I talk about deliverability, it's the instantaneous demand that you need at any given point in time. So just, you know, sometimes you confuse the two, but deliverability is going to be the main focus of today's talk versus annual supply. So just keep that in mind as I go through this. For decades, a great luxury existed with the overabundance of natural gas that was really a byproduct of oil exploration in the inlet. Production obligations were easily met. Producers shouldered the peak demand requirements, and usually low prices were enjoyed by the consumer. Today, the outlook is quite different. A supply gap is lurching in the horizon, and Cook Inlet is in a state of stress in terms of deliverability and peak demand. Let me explain. Natural gas supply refers to the volume of gas available under current production plans and the current market state. It is often characterized as the longer term, it's often characterized on a longer term basis, such as an annual basis. Deliverability, on the other hand, as I mentioned, is the rate of natural gas delivery at any specific point in time. Deliverability is an instantaneous reaction. For instance, when you turn on your stove at your house, you have gas on demand. That is deliverability. This is a graph that is put together by the DNR. It's the most, I think they might have a little bit different version, but it's the same data. It shows the Cook Inlet natural gas production supply on an annual basis, and it depicts the estimated annual demand by the area utility. So, I don't know if this pointer is not going to work that far. But you'll see a vertical line about 2006. That is, everything to the left of that line is actual production and actual data. And then to the right of 2006, actually a little bit further than 2006, is all forecast. And what this is just an estimate of each of the fields that are currently active in Cook Inlet and where they are on their life cycle. So you can see that there is a significant decline right now in Cook Inlet, and that's really about a 15 to 20% decline rate. And the tallest blue, or the blue mark, or the blue, I guess, segment that's on the top is gas that could be available if you were to continue on with future plans. Don't know if it's really there or not. So that's what I would consider as probable resource. Not necessarily proven, but probable. That dot that I have on the graph is the current actual production. So you can look at that and think all the way up to the yellow, or that goldish color, we're pretty accurate in the forecast. That blue has a level of uncertainty. Also on that graph is the 88 BCF year, and that's the DNR estimate of the utility demand. So the NSTARs, the Chugach, and the other utilities, that's what their demand is. And where that 88 BCF a year crosses even the blue, you're talking 2013 is where there's going to be an annual significant supply issue in Cook Inlet. This next slide are some slides that we put together internally, and it represents the natural gas production in Cook Inlet by vintage. So how old is the gas? When you complete a well, we put an age on it. When you add perforations to produce from a different zone, we put a date on that. And so this just represents how old the gas is. And the yellow is from wells drilled or recompleted pre-1980. And you go up the line to the current, or the magenta colors for this decade. And you can see that about 50%, if I go to this next slide, which is the same data, it's just on a percentage basis, about 50% of the production is just a little bit higher, is from wells drilled or completed over the past decade, or over the past, since 2000 essentially, not the past decade, but the past 8 years. It's noteworthy to point out the declines by vintage and the fact that the recent level of capital investment in Cook Inlet has not offset the decline. And this is data from January of this year, so it's really 2008 and past. So I thought this graph was very, very interesting to look at, because I quite didn't think that as much gas that we produce today is from new wells. What's also interesting to note on this graph is the decline. As we drill more wells and reach further out into our reservoirs to the aerial extents of the reservoirs, these wells decline at a much faster rate. So even though we're spending just as much money or drilling just as many wells, we're not getting the rate and we're not sustaining the rate. The same type of data, but by producer, is even more fascinating. For Marathon, 90% of the production is from completions drilled since 2000. So very significant. We have a very, very young gas portfolio. It's also noteworthy to point out the declines by vintage and the fact that the recent level of capital investment in Cook Inlet has not offset the current decline. And for those not intimate with the oil and gas development, this is far from an exact science. An abundance of uncertainties exist as you continue to exploit and develop fields. The lower recoveries and higher risk, we have subsurface risk, we have a point of diminishing returns. None of it is an exact science. And for instance, last year, we drilled a well that I would have expected to be one of the best wells in the field. It was on the top of the structure, should have been a slam dunk. It came in at a dry hole. And that was a $7 million dry hole. And that's about the average of what it costs for us to drill a well out there. The dry hole costs are going to be less than that, so we don't have to complete it. But, you know, somewhere in the $5 million range is what that dry hole would cost us. Simply put, you reach the point of diminishing returns in all of these fields. The only way to slow the overall decline is to develop new opportunities, seek new exploration, shoot new seismic, find different fields. This is the same type of data, but with the different portfolios at the various companies. Each producer has a unique portfolio of assets and associated production profile. These differences must be recognized and embraced by customers and stakeholders. Commitments made in prior decades likely cannot be repeated point forward. And I say that because our security relies on point forward drilling. It relies on exploration. It relies on new fields. Commitments made in prior decades likely cannot be repeated point forward. Further, commitments made by some parties may not be duplicated by others. And I think this represents that quite well. Look at the different portfolios between the three major producers and the others. The others are going to be the very small independents. The very small independents have a portfolio of vintage gas that's very similar to Marathon's, whereas Conoco's is very much different. So these first slides generate dialogue on annual supply, but that only tells a portion of the story. The immediate matter for concern is the overall peak deliverability. And let me explain. This slide shows the production in red versus the annual sales in blue. So the way I like to look at this is the further separation you have between the red and the blue curve is the excess you have in the system. And as you can see, as you march on through time, through 2005, 6, 7, 8 into current, that separation is pretty much non-existent. So you don't have a lot of flexibility in the system when it comes to meeting the peak demand. In recent years, the inlet has experienced market reduction leading to a very small market, relatively speaking. 88 BCF a year market is extremely small, certainly for three major producing oil companies. We should note that the total peak deliverability rate is falling, as is the overall production flexibility noticed by the narrowing and the separation between the actual sales and production. It is also important to note that the wells drilled in recent years have not offset the current overall decline. And that is represented in the graph with the bars. Those are the number of wells that have been drilled. And you can see, even though we've drilled wells, we have not offset the decline, which is very noticeable from January 2006 to current time. Now, considering the peak daily demand of over 400 million cubic feet a day, this trend suggests that the overall system will be or is extremely challenged in meeting winter demand during the coldest winter periods under the current circumstances this year. So let's step back. On that graph, you have about 440 million cubic feet a day that is available for sales. And we do know that at the coldest of cold last year, you guys were running, Insta was running, what, 400-ish?
Our takes were 235.
And the whole in was somewhere around the 400 demand on the system. So that's less than a 10% difference. 40 million cubic feet a day was what I would call the excess. And when you're, it's less than 10% of the total deliverability. And when your fields are on a 15% decline, where does that leave you this year? Possibly. But I think there's a lot of things that we can do, and it's going to take a lot of work from all of us to make sure that we're managing this appropriately. Okay, these are some interesting graphs. The first one on the left is the number of wells drilled, or actually it's the square miles per well drilled. So Cook Inlet, you have on average 9 square miles between wells drilled. And then you go on to Bighorn Basin, Permian Basin, Anadarko Basin, all those others, with the exception of Williston Basin. They all have wells drilled everywhere. So Cook Inlet's very underexplored. That's some good news for us. Very underexplored. Williston Basin, I would consider the, you know, equivalent as far as number of wells drilled per square mile, so well densities. It's equivalent. But if you look at the graph on the right, Williston Basin has 46 rigs running right now. Cook Inlet has one. So let me ask you, we have a known supply gap, a known deliverability issue, a largely underexplored region. Where are the rigs, and why aren't they running? Something we all need to think about, because there is something fundamentally broken in the market and in Alaska. Something fundamentally is broken, and again, it's going to take a lot of work to fix the problems, and I'll go through some of those here in just a bit. The lack of investment activity is really prompted by many challenges, including first and foremost, a lack of market and the uncertainty and dysfunction of such. Other factors include the burdensome regulation, capital limitations, and really the access to new acreage is a large percent of the acreage on the peninsula is off limits due to various reasons. With these challenges, how do we ensure energy reliability? I believe it requires new investment, not only in new production projects, but also storage and peaking mechanisms and infrastructure for transmission. We also must provide proper consideration to projects on the demand side, such as power plant efficiency projects and consumer conservation, supply side management. I really truly believe that supply side management is our key to having energy reliability in the near term. Overall, the focus must be on creating a means to attract new investment into this highly regulated small market. Attracting new investment is not easy, however. Exploration and development projects are based on the ability to manage or mitigate risk. We have subsurface risk, drilling risk, completion risk, capital efficiency risk, market risk, environmental risk, regulatory risk, fiscal risk. There's a lot of risk that we deal with every day to drill holes, you know, 12,000 feet into the ground, something that you can't see, feel, touch, to make it all happen. And quite frankly, the overall, the greater the overall risk, the higher the expected return by the investor. It's the way companies operate. And again, we operate on a global basis, so my projects up here in Alaska are competing with projects in West Africa, in Texas, in Norway. So it's just not a Alaska market that we look at. Factors that investors consider in seeking appropriate compensation for the risk that they assume include market access, market-driven pricing, and transparency. In Cook Inlet, the regulatory process for LNG exports and sales to regulated utilities are subjected to unduly burdensome procedures. These procedures may be well-intended, but in our view, have been subjected to inconsistency in regulatory guidance and biases, and have influenced by a number of provincial commercial interveners with narrow self-serving focus, which eliminates any potential reward for risk-taking, and as a result places the public security for natural gas supply at risk. For example, over the past 4.5 years, Marathon has been unable to secure regulatory approval of key gas supply contracts we freely and fairly negotiated and entered into with utilities, specifically NSTAR, thus lessening the incentive to further develop gas beyond the current contractual obligations. So as an example, would you buy a house or buy a car with your own money if you knew you couldn't use it for 5 years? The same holds true for a business, a gas company. We can't drill unless we know we have a market out. To illustrate my point in all of these contracts, APO5 was contract with NSTAR. Marathon committed 60 BCF for 10 years, which would have met all of NSTAR's unmet needs requirements through 2016. This contract was rejected by the Regulatory Commission. In APL6 was a follow-on. We committed 38 BCF for 5 years, again, rejected by the commission. Today, we're operating under APL7, which is 8 BCF for 2 years, leaving a significant gap in supply starting 2011. So you can see the train here. We've gone from much longer-term supply contracts, much longer volume commitment, to shorter, shorter, and shorter. A two-year line of sight on a secure contract makes it very difficult to justify long-term projects such as exploring for new resource. For instance, we're going to be drilling Sunrise this year. We've been working that project for 5 years, and we are finally going to drill it this year. So a two-year line of sight is hardly enough to justify doing exploration. And that contract is going to be used for commitments that we currently have in our portfolio. We have contracts that are been negotiated in 1988 and don't expire until 2018. So, ladies and gentlemen, in this view, in your view, does this trend facilitate more or less energy reliability overall for South Central Alaska? How well does this outcome serve the long-term needs of the consumer? And at the end of the day, regardless of the Commission's internal justification for rejecting any of the contracts brought forward, the fact of the matter is companies will not invest without a competitive market outlet. So moving forward, I believe that a mix of contract terms and services provided are beneficial to the overall market. And if allowed to continue, the current trend will bring more uncertainty to the market, not only on the demand side, but also on the supply side. So in the past, producers in Alaska have taken on the onerous of full-service contracts, and these commitments were made under very different production scenarios. So let me explain. When I say full-service contracts, whatever the utilities need at any point in time, we're there to offer. So we provide storage in some cases. Some company, you know, Marathon's one of them that provides the storage. In the lower 48 contrast, that producers typically don't provide the storage services. Utilities have some third party, have some service providers provide it. So it's a very different dynamic up here. Storage is very important for providing the peaking deliverability, the coldest the cold days, you know, the highest amount deliverable, and that's hard to manage as a producer because our wells like steady eddy. They don't like to be open wide open and then shut down, and open wide open in the winter and shut down in the summer. It's very difficult. Natural gas wells are not efficient when they're cycled like that. At any time, certain wells are shut in or choked when we tweak them back to reduce flow. It's called choking. They're at the risk of water encroachment, which results in a loss of deliverability and, quite frankly, a loss of all reserves. So what happens in these reservoirs is you have a water aquifer that's providing the pressure support for that gas to come into the wellbore, and if you don't produce it at a steady rate to outrun the gas, as soon as you shut it in, the water keeps on flowing. Pressures in the reservoir equalize, and pretty soon you need that gas on demand. You get a bunch of water, not so much gas. So those of you that are familiar with geology and reservoir drive mechanisms and cooking understand this significance. Although producers have traditionally committed to full delivery requirements, this is not a producer obligation point forward. Other parties must accept ultimate responsibility for addressing and managing their own customer needs. We have seen progression of this thinking. There's no doubt about it. Storage is the hot topic with many entities, the utilities, the producers, third-party providers. Unfortunately, the recognition by one or two parties will not achieve the necessary results, and regulators and policymakers must take time to understand the issues at hand. collaborate to instigate necessary material changes. So what does all this mean to you? Well, it is at risk, and there's a whole lot of things we need to do in a whole short, limited period of time. We can't get storage developed in a matter of weeks or months. It takes years. So that's where supply-side management comes into play. And I know the city is doing a very good job, and the utilities are doing a very good job, along with the producers, at making sure that we have contingency plans in place. Should there be a piece of equipment that fails in the field, and it cuts out that additional gas that you need on the coldest of cold days, we're doing everything we can to ensure that we have needs met. But I think it's appropriate to discuss that we are planning for contingencies, and, you know, turn your thermostat down just a little bit on the coldest of cold days will help us all when if there are any shortages that are looming. And how much time do I have? Am I out?
I'd say about 2.5 seconds. No,
okay.
A minute, can you find
me? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we need to.
So what has Marathon done? I'm not going to go through all this other stuff here. We've drilled 76% of the wells in Cook Inlet since 2005. We service a big portion of the utility demand. We've built a rig specifically for drilling in Cook Inlet. We have built storage, and we are looking to build additional storage projects potentially. Depends on multiple things. So we're doing what we can to continue on being a good business provider in the state of Alaska. We love operating up here. We have very competent and hardworking people in our operations, and they do what it takes to make sure that we keep the gas flowing in the dead of winter. So I apologize. I had to cut this short, and, you know, are there any questions?
One quick question, and maybe Mark can answer this too. If we run out of gas, if we run out of gas, do we meet everyone's need? Who are you cutting out first?
Realistically, if there is an industrial user is first off, but they already divert already, and then there are no interruptible customers. And then from there, if we're on a curtailment, the next option is basically MLP going to diesel. They have the ability, and that's going to be the biggest bang for the buck, because they can basically pull off $40 million if they go to diesel. They haven't had to do that, but over the last 2 or 3 years, there's been a few times I've been on the phone with them advising them that get ready for it.
You know, I don't want to get people completely wound up and very, you know, real scared about this. I think this is more of an awareness. We have to be cautious about our approach. I think we can get through the winter without rolling brownouts and blackouts, but we're on the razor edge. You know, we can't continue on another 2, 3, 4 years of this, because, yes, you will have brownouts and blackouts. There's no doubt about it. However, with that said, one major compressor in one of our major fields throws a rod or whatever happens, and it shuts down. We don't have a, you know, another one readily available. Yes, there will be some shortages that we have to face. So it takes a small break in any key part of the operations, and we've upset the apple cart.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
Yep. Very much.
Okay, while Carrie is drawing a ticket for our raffle and contest, let me just mention next week our program is Willie Hensley, the author of 50 Miles from Tomorrow, former state senator and Alaskan Native, instrumental in the Alaska Native Claims Act. Don't forget Sandra Wicks and Bruce's project, Log Moving Project, talk to Sandra. The Saturday Mobile Food Pantry, and November 11th, 11-11, the Anchorage East Opera event. Okay.
Sounds good. Thank you, everybody. Well, we'll make this quick and short. We've got a ticket number. Are you ready? It's a pink ticket. Last three digits, 685. 685.
685. Jeff. Okay. Wait a minute. Okay, Tim, here we go. Here's the deal.
Okay, here's the deal.
You're
make a decision on. Now, what's he splitting it with you, Jeff, or what's the deal?
It's all his if he can make it.
It's all his if he can make it. Okay. Here's the choices, Tim.
All right, Jim.
You can use a small cup, you can shoot for the small cup for the whole pot,
yes.
Or a larger cup for half the pot.
And the amount is $260.
Yeah, I'll leave it like
the big cup. Okay.
Larger cup for half the pot.
You get
okay.
Half the pot. That's $130 is.
You realize that Tom Watson is about your age, Tim, missed this pot to win the U.S. Open.
All right, drum roll.
Oh, right on the edge. Look that. Let's try. The pot grows. Okay, thank you very much. We are adjourned. Thank you, Kerry.